Live from North Hollywood, this is Bachelor Masters. I'm Craig, and with me, as always, is the smart and insightful Chris.
Hey, Craig.
You are back from Rochester, ready to look at the Bachelorette hometown dates.
Oh, yeah. Good episode this week. Can't wait.
We say that every week, which, you know, is good. We're getting a good run of the Bachelorette. You actually, before we started recording, you had something very kind to say about the episode.
Yes, I thought that a part of this, which we'll discuss, was whether it's true or produced, fake, good. It's good drama. It was emotionally engaging. I would watch it if it were a scripted film. I thought this was a really good episode. We've skipped the only bad episodes. That's why we always say it's a good episode, because we took our sabbatical during the bad ones.
We did. We did take a sabbatical. The brain hemorrhage that was the scandal with Bachelor in Paradise. And we came back strong. And here we are again. We're going to do it. Chris and I are in the same location in North Hollywood, which is really uncanny because LA is a very big place, and we found ourselves within a mile of each other. So we're actually in the same place, which might account for the very slight echo some of you might hear on the podcast. Apologize. But through the crack in the shield of our voices, I can actually see the TV now, Chris.
Okay.
And we're looking at the sort of clips from the 2 hours ahead of us, and we're staring at Dean's dad.
Yes, we are. We're staring a little bit longer than I'd like because of the technical difficulty, but it's about to get going again. Here we go. We've got Dean on the screen.
And if there's people listening to this podcast, which I hope there are, I imagine that's what people want to really get into. But the editors, as you imagine they would have, put them as the fourth hometown. So you got to get through three others in order to get to Dean's dad. And it doesn't disappoint, and, you know, we both, I think, have a lot to say about it. But the surprising thing to me was how interesting Eric's hometown date was.
Totally agree. I was just about to say, I felt like I was falling in love with Eric even a little more than Rachel was. I thought he comes off incredibly well in this episode.
He does.
He's always been pretty interesting, but we haven't gotten to know him nearly as much as in this episode. And there's just so much to him that I would have spent another hour in Baltimore with Eric. He's great.
Yeah. And, you know, I mentioned this pretty much every podcast, but early on you said that he seemed to be either on or off his medications. If he is in fact on medications, I know nothing about that, and I don't want to presume, but, you know, the way those work, it's difficult to sort of go on and off them unless they're sort of like strong acting, like a benzo or something like that. But, you know, you can waver in your intake of medication, and it can impact you from week to week. Whatever he's done in the last few weeks, whether it's medication or just meditation or feeling comfortable about himself, he is a new man with confidence. She seems to dig him. And whether it was the producers or his idea, this whole thing where he's like, here's beautiful, you know, waterfront Baltimore, but this is not where we're going to spend our day.
I mean, yeah, I like the way he said that too. They're looking at this beautiful park, but he wants to go play some basketball kind of closer to the neighborhood he grew up in. And he says, this is not the experience that I knew. I thought that was kind of funny too.
Well, so he meets a well-timed friend shows up at the basketball court to, you know, as they do on hometown dates, they kind of bring in friends or whatever. There used to be a TV show way back in the day on MTV where it was freestyle rappers. So there would be a scene kind of like SNL or any sort of sketch comedy scene. You know, you come back from a commercial, there'd be a new scene. And they'd kind of set it up, and they'd say a few things. And then rap music would start playing, and they would freestyle rap the scene. It was really cool. Eric's friend here who shows up should have a soundtrack following him around so he can freestyle rap everything that he says.
Well, it's, you know, everything that shows up in Eric's life has this likable sheen to it, including this friend. Sam's like a really cool guy. I never heard Eric describe himself this way, but Rachel always says that he described himself as a cool square. So that's always the term I think about, like, growing up. Like, he wants to say, like, he's a cool guy, but he was also, like, you know, straight-laced, like, student. He never got into trouble. And, yeah, he comes off as, like, genuinely, like, a cool, kind of likable guy. But yeah, I get, at least the way he presents himself and he's presented in this episode, it is kind of like, oh, this kind of like kid made good from a family where not everyone made great decisions, and his friends back him up on that story, and that's kind of what his friend on the court is doing here.
It's like Rachel goes, so tell me a little bit about Eric. You know, but the thing, if there was a sort of inconsistency in Eric's narrative here,
yeah,
I feel like everyone is showering him with these praises of getting out of the hood and making something of himself.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like his friend here is a gangbanger. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he is. I mean, we don't know anything about
him
either.
Well, he doesn't present himself that way, at least. I know what you mean.
The basketball court looks nice. It's not like this is some places I've seen in South L.A. I mean,
well, yeah, and to that point, I agree. His family, even though he kind of alludes to mistakes that have been made or some trouble growing up, everyone seems so, they don't give any of that in the presentation. Like,
right.
His parents, I don't know, they never specifically say if they're married or divorced, but I got the sense they weren't still together, but they seemed completely kind of amicable. They kind of mentioned, like, I wasn't always there for you growing up, but they seem, they have, like, he has a great relationship, it seems, with his mom and dad in the show. I found that too. I was sort of thinking, well, I have to kind of take it as his word that he had a hard time growing up, because this seems so functional right now.
Do we know where he lives now? Is that, I assume he doesn't.
I think
live
we do. I don't remember, but I think we do. Yeah, I don't know if he's on the West Coast or something now. I'm not sure.
Let's be honest, it's not like he's. I mean, I have certain views that, like, I don't think some of the jobs that people aspire to are all that great, like stockbroker or something. But, like, you know, because they're not necessarily doing the world a great service. But, I mean, let's be honest, he's a personal trainer. It's not like he's, you know, saving baby seals in the Antarctic or something. It's like everyone's like, oh, you got out and you made a huge success of yourself. I mean, unless he's like, got his own Bravo show about being a personal trainer. I don't quite see how that's like being super successful as a 30-year-old. No offense to any personal trainers that might be listening to the podcast, but it's not like,
unless you
the high echelon.
Baby seal, you haven't impressed Craig.
Well, it's not like the highest of, like,
no, I'm kidding,
the way they're showering the praise on. It's like, the praise should be more like, oh, yeah, you got a cool job as a personal trainer. You're living where you want to live. That's awesome. It's not like,
yeah,
oh, my God, you're a huge success.
Right.
You know, to me,
no,
that connotates like independently wealthy and able to travel and, you know, maybe maybe being on The Bachelor is actually maybe that's what they're talking about, because he's now on TV and that is being successful. So maybe I'm rushing to judgment.
It's true, he's top four, and who knows what other shows he could be on if he isn't the winner of this show down the road. So, yeah.
So the rumors are that Brian wins this, right? So
ugh.
That's the unfortunate thing, is because I really like Eric, and I don't. If she doesn't pick Eric, I don't really understand what he did. It's almost like, I don't see that he's done anything to lose.
Yeah, for me, that I agree. I sort of like him best. I don't think Dean is that bad, but without getting ahead of ourselves, obviously, he's not eligible to be the winner. So that means it's down to the other three.
It's not eligible. I like that. Well, we'll get to Dean, but I'll just say as a preview, the thing about Rachel is she's got a little side to her that isn't necessarily all that virtuous. Like, she really pushed Dean into that confrontation
yes.
that he did not want to do. And then when it was all done, she bailed on him. I mean, it was very, very tactically, it was very tactical and not very nice.
Well, also, I'm sorry to jump the gun, but she did say she loved Dean. The only one, at least on camera, I can recall that she's said, I love you to.
Right. Yeah, and, he mentions that when he gets cut. He's like, you know, I said I love you and you said it back. But
they juxtaposed that so quick, that moment so quickly with him being cut, that I did feel pretty bad for Dean.
Well, like laying, what you can never come back from that moment where they're laying on the floor, which, you know, is like covered. Those pillows have probably never been washed. And they're like awkwardly trying to get back to like, you know, I'm vulnerable and I'm on a TV show and I love you. And it's just not working because of everything that transpired. So it's like you knew it was over.
Well, yeah, the other great thing about the final moments of the show is they show real discomfort that Dean's dad has with being on the show, I think. Oh, man. In a way, I always wonder about that with these hometowns. I think there must be, you know, if these are really mostly normal people, people are uncomfortable being on TV, but they never show that. They did here. They did today.
Yeah, he melts down, and the Dean's dad shows that he's a complete fraud when it comes to his embracement of a Hinduism and the sort of spiritual side of things. And well, anyway, so back to Eric.
Back to
they're dancing.
Eric.
The family's dancing.
I love
laughing.
That moment. The spontaneous dance is so funny.
The family. Everything is going peachy.
What do you think of the aunt who's speaking here? Do you remember her name? Aunt, is it like Lynette or something?
Well, she looks just like Eric, which I thought was interesting. I mean, the whole family kind of, well, maybe not the dad, but the whole family really looks like him. And they're all so nice. And what I like is that if they're not like grilling her on the sort of usual laundry list of bachelor questions like you know, are you vulnerable, have you let your guard down, do you see a future with him, is he going to propose to you? It's sort of like more conversational
right.
than that. And
I
was just going to say it's hard on the bachelor to really have a like a scene that would happen in real life,
right?
And you know, it's like when back in the day when, you know, it was kind of a thing to bring a girl home, you know, I never really had that like bring a girl home kind of mentality, because it's like, oh, you just show up and the girl's there. But if you're going to have a more official meet the girlfriend situation, I mean, this is it. This is exactly, I think, how it would
yeah.
go.
Yeah. Well, I wondered, it seemed, and I might have been reading into this because the season is a little more loaded with the racial politics than other seasons, but her name is Verna, Aunt Verna, by the way. I wondered if Aunt Verna was diplomatically sort of trying to approach Rachel, wanting to talk a little bit more about the racial, you know, sort of the racial component that, you know, Eric's the only black contestant of the last four, and she's sort of, that's what her question is. She says something to the effect of like, well, let's talk about the RACE thing, is it been right. hard being the first black bachelorette? And Rachel gives her answer where she says this a few different ways throughout the show, like what she's realized is she has to be selfish, that's right. the word she uses, and that like she should be entitled to, like, love has no color, she should be entitled to choose whoever she wants, whoever's most compatible with her. So she's sort of, even though but she's very cognizant of, she sort of sees it as this like dichotomy of black and non-black audiences. And I wondered if some of her questions seemed like she wanted to ask, like, listen, do you think there's like Eric's being black is a positive for him? Did you get that sense at all? But it seemed like when she heard Rachel's answer, I think she backed off that, or maybe they just didn't show some of those parts. But right. I sort of thought she was like sort of subtly trying to insinuate, like, look, Eric's a good candidate. Whatever you think of him symbolically, right. he's a great candidate.
Well, We went into this last podcast. Let me quickly restate my opinion, which is she can date whoever she wants, and it's very white. It was very white of me to have that initial thought about, oh, it's so nice that she kind of has a sort of spattering of different racial backgrounds. And then I pinched myself and realized, like, she can date whoever the fuck she wants. It's not my place to tell her. She could have four black guys and four white guys or whatever she wants, because that's her prerogative. So it could just be that she likes dating non-black men. I mean, that could be the reality.
Right.
And we don't know. This is completely speculative, but she could have felt pressured to have Eric on because she's black. Maybe she wanted four white guys.
We know that she said she comes from a community that's predominantly white, because I think she and there was a previous contestant, I'm forgetting who it was, if it was Josiah or someone, who also said they grew up in... It was the contestant who said he had only dated white women, but he was a black man himself. And I think she said, okay, well, it's the same. You know, I also come from a community that's of a similar demographic. So it's true that we know that she's from a different kind of community than the one Eric grew up in.
Is it Peter that brings his black friends?
That was so awkward.
Rotating white women.
I thought that was terrible, because it's so the only funny thing was that they call it out because it's so transparent before, like, Rachel's the one who calls it out. But I thought it was so awkward, because they might have a great relationship when the cameras are off and it might just be awkward on camera, but all of his friends look like they're being forced, like, paraded on camera to show that, like, Peter isn't as white as you think he is.
And they didn't, they said they were good friends, but I don't even know. I mean, it sort of felt like that Seinfeld episode where George Costanza is like trying to take pictures with that black coworker to prove that he has black friends. Cause it was like, Hey, what's going on? It's like, that's not how friends do greet each other. It was really bizarre. I mean, I know there's cameras there and people get nervous.
Yeah, well, I had the same. I felt the same. I felt like maybe it was someone that he grew up with. I don't know if he still lives in the area, but maybe these are like people that he's known from his past, but he's kind of moved on. He hasn't really talked to them in a while. That's kind of what it felt like, you know.
Well, you know, that could be the case too. Maybe I don't think he lives in Wisconsin anymore. Maybe he does. Well, you know, back to Dean for a second. We all knew Dean was going to get cut, but. Yeah. Why not cut Peter and keep Dean for one more round?
Oh, man, I totally agree, especially if hometown performance counts for anything. I thought Peter's was just so boring. Again, it was like it's clear that he's sort of generically attractive. I think she has some attraction to him, but her pure kind of like libido attraction seems to be to Brian.
Right.
So, and then Dean is a little more interesting, so I agree. But who knows? Maybe Dean was just too dysfunctional or something. But it's a reality show. How can he be too dysfunctional?
Right. And we can't forget that weird, horrible, like how Dean was acting in Geneva. He was acting like an idiot. So it's like, you know, whatever.
That's true.
And they are both from Wisconsin, her and Peter. So I don't know.
Yeah.
All right, so it looks like we're kind of getting to the end of Eric here. They're toasting, and I think they're going to go on their way. They're going to do their little dog and pony show in front of the black Cadillac sedan where they drive off in. And, you know, but Baltimore looked pretty good in this episode. It's like, it wasn't that long ago that the Orioles had to play a baseball game without anyone in the stadium because of the riots, you know, around... was it Freddie Gray? Was that who was the black
the
youth
person
that
was
killed in the
killed
back
in
of
Baltimore.
In the back of the police van? You know,
right,
so,
I believe
you
that's
know,
right.
Baltimore has a history of that, and I think you know, as white people, you know, I'm a big defender of you know, lower incomes, you know, historically marginalized communities. I've always lived in those communities, and so I'm not trying to put myself on a pedestal, but I when I see Baltimore, I get really turned on because I like its like complexity and you know. But if you're of the ilk where you watch these shows because you want to see, because you're sort of like not exposed to things other than your little circle, I think this did a good job of trying to bridge that, you know, that narrative, the narrative of what Baltimore really is. I think he really represented his community well.
Yeah, totally agree. Especially after the tease that was sort of given last week, where it seemed like they might be going in prison or something. Direction. Yeah. Exactly. I thought that this segment actually turned out to be, a little more nuanced than maybe we were led to believe it might be.
Now, we're watching this on our unofficial sponsor, Hulu, and so that means there's no commercials, right? It's just going to cut to Brian?
Yeah, it's just going to go right on to Brian.
Now, so I watched this on ABC Live, and there was a commercial for none other than Bachelor in Paradise. And so I'm guessing you didn't see this because you stick to Hulu.
Right.
The commercial made it seem like Bachelor in Paradise had been like on the verge of, it was being shut down because of some great conspiracy in the television industry. They're like, Paradise was almost lost. And they had all these like quotes from the New York Times and stuff like that. Like, you know, Paradise scandal. And then it's like, but we're back. And, you know, they played all the celebratory music. And then, so at the end of our podcast last time, we speculated on when it might premiere. And we said that we would launch our Facebook page to correspond with it. They announced it as August 14th.
Oh, that's not delayed very much at all.
Yeah,
I thought it would be much further delayed.
That's a really quick turnaround. I mean, if they were filming, I imagine they're filming it right now. If they filmed it, I think, starting a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
That's like less than it's about a month turnaround time.
Yeah. And I think the original premiere date was only August 8th or 9th, I believe. So it's about a week that it's delayed. Not too bad.
So remind me where Brian lives. Are we in Dallas?
This is a good question. No, we're in Miami.
Miami. And he kind of plays up his sort of, I guess, Latin background because he speaks Spanish. Or Portuguese, I assume it's Spanish, because look how much I know.
It was Spanish too. But
he takes her immediately to these like Spanish Miami old timers that are playing like I don't know
dominoes,
or something ridiculous like that. And whereas Eric I think represented Baltimore well because it seemed very natural, and then he had that really great entry. This is sort of like really.
I felt it was so artificial too, and I know it's presentation, so again, I'm not commenting on whether it really is artificial or not, but you compare also the way Eric's parents seem compared to the way that Brian's mother is portrayed
right.
here.
Well, she's maybe a big character, right? That's the big X factor with him, is she's like this overbearing person who's like broken up relationships in the past.
Push that so hard. I think they push that harder in the show than she wants to push it. But exactly, they make her like, I don't know. It felt like borderline offensive, like that she's being portrayed almost as this like ethnic overbearing mother,
right.
Something like that. That in a way that I thought like Eric's mom presented herself very naturally. And again, I know it's not fair compare contrast necessarily if these are how real people are, but I just felt that it was indicative of the kind of artificiality of the Brian situation is how some of the quote characters in life are portrayed also.
Well, by taking him to this like weird dominoes game, it's like if you go to Puerto Vallarta or something in Mexico and you go to like, you know, Senior Frogs or something. It's like, let's go to like the touristy beach and we'll go to the, you know, the coffee shop where they play dominoes and have like a band playing. It's like, we're going to get authentic Mexico, even though it's far from it. It's like,
yeah,
it's like, this is not where you hung out when you were growing up. It's not interesting. I don't know.
Exactly. And they also, he specifically calls it authentic, which underscores how artificial it is. Because he says, when he's talking to the dominoes players, the elderly men, they say, oh, where are you taking her? Oh, you know, we were going to go to the beach and whatnot, but I wanted to show her the real Miami. And I thought that was so funny because exactly it's like where the real places that most people hang out aren't necessarily full of tons of people, you know, dressed up, dancing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's that? I mean, unless it's like a Saturday afternoon or Sunday fun day, I don't really see this. But, you know, but everything's artificial on this show. They bring in people. And
true.
They,
this is why it's so endlessly fascinating to me, because it's sort of like what's artificial and real just becomes so arbitrary at a point. It exists only in the mind, and it confuses me,
yeah.
And I melt. So it's a good point. We always have to remember everything is being filmed and is highly artificial, but that still struck me as an audience member. Let's just say it felt wrong. It felt a little off.
Well, let's talk about his chiropractic positioning for a little bit here. They make no mention of it, and that's always been a
they're getting away from it.
Well, that's kind of been something that the Bachelor's always been about, and Rachel particularly. They never bring up things that you would normally talk about, like what do you do for a living, what's it like being a chiropractor, where's your office. Like, the one of the first things I like to do if I start dating somebody is go see where they work. I think that's a lot of fun, you know. And they make no mention of it. She doesn't ask, like, what's it like being a chiropractor in Miami? Are you wealthy? Are you not wealthy? Is your family wealthy? Are you a chiropractor because you just wanted something to do? We don't know anything. He seems unnaturally cavalier walking around Miami. Like, he doesn't, like, he's part of, like, the rich elite or something. Like, he just sort of walks around kind of like, yeah, I grew up here. We had, oh, that's our family yacht. I mean, maybe I'm reading too much into him, but it just doesn't, like, does he have to check in with his office? I don't know. It just does nothing. Something just doesn't add up with it. Like,
well,
why did he go become a chiropractor, of all things?
You've been suspicious of the title chiropractic physician from day one, so.
Well, it's the editors have a lot of fun with the title cards.
Aspiring drummer, chiropractic physician.
Chiropractic physician. Well, that's always been the thing with chiropractors, is that they call themselves doctors, and, like, you know, are they really doctors or whatever? Is it pseudoscience? I tend to have a favorable view of chiropractic, but I just want to know more about him as a chiropractor, because it's not like chiropractic's not something you just fall into.
Yeah, you have to
sort of have to go out of your way to become a chiropractor.
Well, I wonder, sometimes we get into the background of people's families, what they've done for a living, and I'm not sure we did with his parents, because I sort of wonder what their life is like as well. Right now we're watching as Rachel and company are embracing the mother, father, and associated family members. And the mom is sort of making her first introduction and kind of like a moment that's not a sneak peek. And she's toasting like how much she loves her son, that he's her baby, everything in her life. So we sort of get the flavor of what she's going to be like.
Well, I admit that the whole episode, this was the part that I kind of started to fade a little bit.
Okay.
Like, because, you know, as our listeners probably know, 2 hours is a big investment, and there's going to be points when your brain just sort of, like, you know, shuts down. And it was kind of during this, because we had this sort of, like, overbearing mom who's kind of plain, talking to her son who's plain, on a couch that's plain. And they're not saying anything overly interesting.
Yeah, I agree. It feels the most plain is a good word for it. It's sort of, it's not, you know, it's mediocre, I think, in the truest sense of the word, where it's just there's nothing really wrong with it or that stands out, but there's nothing particularly distinctive. That's just how I felt. And I think they were really trying to play up the overbearing nature of the mom is the entertaining thing. But in the moments, there's nothing completely like confrontation. She's just fine, you know, and he is always kind of smiling in this. Again, he's like an attractive, he's like someone who would be in a student film at USC. I always call it like the generic attractive kind of actor type, but they don't have like a lot of range, you know, they're just sort of like on one note. He's fine. It's just I don't really, nothing stands out about him to me except that Rachel's attracted to him. That's all that I really got.
Wow, I've never heard a better representation of USC in my life. or at least what goes on at the film school. I used to have a, well, I had a professor in college that would start off the semester. He always yelled. He was very booming voice. He'd say, "The average attention span is 7 minutes. The average class time is 50 minutes. That's a problem." So, you know, the fact that we made it this far is really quite remarkable. But I don't know. I couldn't even tell you what they talked about, to be honest. I just sort of like my brain shut down. And like, you're right. It's because it's almost like you're watching a student film. No offense to student films. I know you've made a lot of student films, which are actually very remarkable.
Oh, thank you. And I love bad student films as well. So, yes, no disrespect.
It looks like a student film. The actors are student films. It's sort of washed out like a student film.
Even we're watching Rachel and the Mother enter right now, and they enter like it's a student. They have this like unnatural entrance. They both sit down on the couch.
It's like, because student films, they always like edit it so it's like starts a little too early and ends a little too late.
Exactly.
And there's not like the close-ups aren't cut in correctly. It's like the editors, maybe they handed this to the B team, you know.
Which it's again, like, I sort of wonder how the family feels about having to be on film, because I'm totally reading into this, have no reason to believe this other than it's the story in my mind, but the mom, I sort of get the feeling that she's not as overbearing as they make her seem, but that's sort of the angle they went with because they knew, like, there's nothing here, so we need to create something. So they have her say a few of these things. Right now she's saying, like, Brian is my life, but right. I also want to advise you that you marry Brian. You are marrying the family, too.
Right.
And it's sort of like, what does that even mean? It's like, are you really intimidated? I don't know. This is like, it just feels kind of exaggerated. I'm not sure that that's really an issue or something that really puts the fear of anything into me.
Right.
It's certainly, I mean, we both agree that the Dean story is so strong, but this doesn't approach the stakes of anything near that encounter at the end. So just, let's sort of, I agree. I was sort of like, okay, I get it. Let's get on to the next hometown. I get this, the tone of this.
Well, as some, you know, I had a mom that's not unlike this mom. I say had because she's not alive anymore, but it's tough, you know. It's like what compels. I mean, I imagine I would be the kind of parent that, like, yeah, you know, you want to kind of like have rules and like be part, you know, sort of like also help out your kid and maybe vet. I mean, but I don't know. At some point, it's like what. When does someone like this, a mother, when does it go into her brain that she needs to, like, be this way?
Yeah.
Like, confront the date. Like you were that age once. You got married. Like, what changed in your brain that you feel like this is what you have to say to this person? And especially, like, don't you have a self-reflexive moment where you realize you're on TV? Like, there's so many bad decisions that happen on reality shows that I'm just saying things that probably everyone thinks, but like, what goes on that you, so A, what goes on in your brain that you think, I need to confront this person, make a fool out of myself and my son, and then B, not realize that you're doing it when it's happening?
Yeah, and the other thing, Brian looks young to me, but he's something like 38, and sometimes right. that kicked in also, where I was like, this is a man approaching 40 years old.
Right.
It's not like if Dean's mother were alive and were in the scene, or, you know, if his father had a different personality, he's sort of young enough that it's like,
right.
okay.
You still have a protective shield around
exactly.
you.
Exactly, but this is like a dude who's, you know, he's well
He's a chiropractic 18. Physician, Chris.
He's 40
I mean...
years old. It's like, what do you care about what your 40-year-old son is doing in his dating life?
Yeah, at some point, a parent has to resign the fact that their son's a bachelor.
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong with that.
So I have a disconnect there as well. But, you know, we're winding down the hometown here with Brian.
Thank
the show
God.
Dutifully showed us Miami, all of authentic. I also like the Chiron, the lower third subtitle that says Miami, Florida. Brian's hometown.
Well, do you think this black SUV is like the President of the United States, where they fly it, you know, they fly it in a C-130 to the different towns? Or do you think it's the same SUV, or they always have a rental company on hand?
I wonder if there's the official rental company of The Bachelor. Like, they always rent from Enterprise or something. Yeah. And, you know, they just know that we've got the Bachelor model or the Bachelorette model. Yeah.
Well, they always show the I guess it would be the Chiron of the car. I mean, we know, they always, you know, obviously the car company is plugging themselves. But you're right. It's interesting that they don't plug the rental company. You'd think that would be a thing. But, because, you know, especially in the age of Netflix and Hulu, that's big money, is these product placements.
Oh, people who had viewing parties, you know that there's people, especially in LA, that would rent the same car to go to everyone, pile in, go to their bachelorette viewing party.
Yeah. And don't get me started on, you know, a giant SUV just to kind of haul one very thin bachelorette around.
Plumes of emission just coming out of the exhaust.
All right. So here's Peter. And, okay, Chris, you know me pretty well. You know I have a certain look. I wear typically the same outfit every day, which is a black V-neck and, you know, like hiking pants, like cargo pants. That's my look. But the thing is, it's like I can scale up if I have to. I don't like collars, so I typically never wear a button down. But, like, I have fancier V-necks.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, I have stuff that you get at a nice designer shop in L.A. or whatever that is still V-necky, collarless, but nice. He's wearing, I know exactly what shirt this is. It's a Hanes gray pocket tee.
Like, classic.
I mean, I get it. It's Wisconsin. The weather's not great. It's unpredictable and you need to layer, but like, and maybe he doesn't like collars too, but he really doesn't have a nicer shirt he can wear.
He's at the hometown. Doesn't he want to do everything to push himself over the edge?
I just don't get it. Like, obviously they agreed to dress down because she's not dressed up either, but she at least looks nice. I mean, he just looks like he just woke up.
He's trying to show, you know, in this hometown, he's trying to show that he's kind of, you know, he's a relaxed, fun-loving guy. He's going to take her to the museum to see some art. Right. You know,
because when you think art, you think Wisconsin.
Well, I like that what he's chosen to do on his hometown is nothing of the impression I had of him before. You know, it also feels like it comes out of nowhere, right, in that he's like, oh, let's go to the farmer's market. They're going to get some. So, and then we're going to see some art. You know, he's just a down-to-earth Midwestern guy, but he also likes some of the finer things. You know, that's like the impression I get a little bit seeing that, or that he's trying to create with the hometown.
Oh, that's a great read.
Oh, here we are. This is the scene with the friends. This is amazing.
Okay, let's set the scene here for our listeners. His hair is grayer than it's ever been.
Yeah.
He's wearing his gray pocket tee, and he hasn't shaved because he thinks he looks cool in a 5 o'clock shadow.
Nice.
They're in a booth in what looks like the worst diner in Madison. You know, it's like a college diner, which, okay, it's fine. I get it. But then they roll in two black friends with the two white wives. And then they all sit awkwardly, six abreast, in the booth. And he is forcing the conversation. I mean, is somebody who talks
Wait,
a
here,
lot...
here's the quote verbatim. He said, I have 10 really close friends, and you said 8 of 10 are black. This is Rachel saying that. And then they're all laughing awkwardly at the fact that she's having to... And then they're even saying, this is my black friend card, one of the friends says, coming out.
which is cool. I'm okay with the idea that it's, like, open. Like, that's actually what America needs, is to be able to be open about this and not be uncomfortable about it. So that... inherently, I'm not against.
Yeah.
But they just, like, okay, I was just going to say, as somebody who talks a lot myself, like, I've been in situations where I'm the person who drives the conversation. That just comes naturally to me, and I'm cool with that. He's doing that. It's not like a two-way thing going on here. And again, there's cameras. Maybe they're not comfortable with it. But the two wives don't say anything.
They don't say anything. That is a little... There's something, yeah... either awkward or, you know, troubling at worst, awkward at best about that.
And the poor Wisconsiners, you know, it's like, this is your shot to be on TV, and that's the shirt you're going to wear. Like,
I can't wearing... be too hard on any fashion, because I would make mistakes worse than this, but I get what you're saying.
Well, you live in LA. I think you learn how to present yourself. It's just built in. And she's wearing this shirt from like 1998. This like blue thing where the shoulders are cut off. It's like, really? It's like, I mean, there is the internet. Wisconsin has the internet. You can look up like what's trendy, and there's nothing that pisses me off more. And this is just, he's guilty of this black friend of his guilty of it, but everyone's guilty of it. The white crew undershirt underneath the button up pisses me off.
Noting
more than
to self, I'm writing
else.
This down right now, Craig. I don't.
It's like, if you're gonna wear an undershirt under your collared button down anyway,
yeah.
Like, which I don't do anyway. But like, if you're gonna do it, why not wear a black one? It's like everyone wears the white one, and it just pisses me off so bad.
You mean because it stands out so much?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
I've never understood that. But whatever, he's doing it. Everyone else in the world does it. The other black guy, he's dressed. He's kind of wearing a baseball tee. I think that's kind of nice. But
yeah.
Can we get to Dean yet? What's going on here? What are they saying? They're just shooting the breeze.
Well, Peter's hang up is, you know, is he? Well, actually, I might be getting it slightly wrong because it's so generic. Also, I think his is like, I'm ready for a long-term girlfriend, but maybe not a wife. And that's
the
flag.
That's a big point of controversy.
Right.
Right. That comes up where it's like, he's not going to propose unless he wants to, which is kind of a bachelor trope that's been said many times in past seasons where it's like, well, I'm not going to propose. The idea behind it's sort of like you say it because you usually it goes over well. It's like, oh, he's on the show for the right reasons. He's only going to propose if he means it. That's usually how it goes over.
Yeah.
But in this case, Rachel's like, wait a second. Like, I'm not going to be embarrassed standing up there and not have him propose.
Yeah.
And I think the last time we didn't have a proposal was the very controversial Pablo season. He was the rich soccer player from Spain who like treated all the girls like shit, and then at the very end didn't even propose to the girl. He's like, I just want to be your girlfriend or a boyfriend or whatever. And I think that's the last time that happened. Maybe there's been Bachelor in Paradises where I think they've agreed to not get proposed or whatever. But so now they're going to meet the family, Wisconsin family.
Yep, we've got a sister with some kids. The kids give Peter a good chance to show how good he is with the little ones.
They're like, we have country-fried steak and corn, you know, ready in the kitchen, you know, with some carrots. And they're all sitting around on there okay, let me tangent for a second, Chris.
Okay.
Having lived in Iowa, which is next to Wisconsin, I've actually been to Madison. It's a very cool town. We're spoiled on the coasts because we have tourism and we have technology companies. We have money coming in. So, and that money gets spread around and we find ourselves with extra disposable income. So we can do things like buy new couches, paint the walls, get a new carpet, redo the roof. I mean, these are things that we take for granted in living in coastal areas that have money that rolls in. Okay. Wisconsin and the rest of the flyover states don't have that luxury. And I've been all over. I've seen it. You know, all their paycheck goes into the mortgage and that's it. It's like a static economy where the money rolls into itself. And so they don't have the money to like upgrade. And nothing screams at more than this house, because this couch, it's just embarrassing. It's like they bought it, you know, it was a Sears special, and they just never replaced it. So it's like, not only is the couch super uncomfortable, because they're all sitting too far back, And but it's also like that's their only furniture, so it's like a wraparound thing. So they're all sitting like facing each other at 45 degree angles, and it's just awful. And I've been in like grandparents' homes in the Midwest where it's like there really is no extra income to upgrade, and you sit awkwardly, and nothing screams that more than this hometown right here.
If Peter doesn't get picked, maybe it was Rachel's opinion of this couch. Maybe that's the thing, the straw that broke the camel's back.
Well, you know, that's the first thing I notice when I go over to you. You have a very nice couch.
I credit my girlfriend entirely. She this is an amazing. I agree. I love this couch, and it's relatively new. We moved recently and got this.
You need to get a modern couch, because modern couches, you sit more upright, and that's just the thing. There's just something about, like, it's because, you know, Midwesterners are more overweight, because, you know, that's just how it is. They eat more meat and potatoes, and they like the bigger, more fluffier Sears special couches with these big sort of fluffy, like, pillows, and they all sink into it. And it's like, for a skinny person like Rachel, I imagine it's very uncomfortable, because she has to sort of like try to sit upright on the edge of the thing, which is what she's doing. She's sitting forward with her knees on her, yeah, with her shoulders on her, sorry, her elbows on her knees, trying to like make the best of this situation.
Also, are they purposely lighting this a little worse than some of the others? It looks completely under, it looks like they're filming in like the dead of winter or something, and all they had was like one key light. They forgot some like fill lights, and they're not going to turn on any lights in the house. It looks a little dark to me.
Well, the lights are probably incandescent from, you know, they've never upgraded to the you know, the compact fluorescence, so it's probably that like super soft yellow light. And so they probably there's probably no house lighting, and then the house itself probably only has like one window in the living room.
Yeah.
And you're right. So they probably, it's probably close quarters, and they just had to like set it up in an awkward way. And is that the fireplace going in the background?
Well, I see a fireplace. I can't see if there's a fire in it or not. I don't think so.
Okay. Because I was going to say, why are they having a fire going in?
There's some candles in this cutaway interview to Rachel, but no fire.
Okay. Well, sorry to everyone listening who's from Wisconsin. I've done my best to represent you all in a very honest way. If you disagree or have counterpoints, please Twitter at Bachelor Masters. It would really mean the world to us to be able to interact with you. Go Badgers.
Yes, and Buckhawks. Isn't that one of the teams?
Buckhawks? No, there's no Buckhawks. You're thinking the Buckeyes, and that's Ohio.
Oh, whatever.
And the Hawkeyes are Iowa.
I'll say go Buckhawks still.
But Wisconsin, you know, they have their national championships in college sports, so, you know, that, you can hang your hat on that.
There we go. Some of my favorite podcasts come from the Midwest. I'll say that in defense of the Midwest. My favorite film podcast, the co-host is from Wisconsin, so.
Okay.
There you go, Wisconsinites.
Okay. I'm fatigued watching the end of this. Just get to the black SUV. Can we get this over with?
These two middle hometowns, they knew they had a good hometown leading into the episode and a great one going out, but these two middle ones are so boring. And that's a little depressing, that, but maybe in line with some previous, you have more experience with the show than I do, but that these two seem like they become the two front runners, are the two most dull candidates.
Peter and Brian. Well, this has been said on the Rose Pricks podcast. Shout out to my favorite podcast. I like listening to them a lot. They pointed out early on that Rachel likes the kind of dull male, the one who's not going to create any waves, and that probably comes from her federal judge dad. He probably has a very even keel, and so that's the kind of guy she's attracted to.
Yeah. Hey, and as you said, nothing wrong with, you know, Rachel is a very interesting person herself. You've got to know yourself and know what you want, so whatever, you know. I trust her to know what's best in this situation. But well, hey, we're getting on to the big one.
Well, let me close the book on Peter just by saying that I liked him a lot better when he was Bear Grylls up on the mountains getting, you know, swept off the Matterhorn in the snow with his hair, gray hair blowing in the wind. I liked them a lot better then than his sort of like trying to be clean cut with the 5 o'clock shadow.
And lest we forget the puppy party that I think was his first one.
That's right. He's come a long way. Okay, here we go. This is what everyone came for. This is why people suffered through 50 minutes of our podcast so far. It's to get to Dean and his dad. And you all want to hear what Chris and I have to say about him, I'm sure. Let's try to say some things that haven't already been said about him. I, as always, have a lot to say about him. I'm curious. Why don't you start off? Because I'm really curious to see what your initial take is on this whole thing.
Well, you're going to know better than I what's been said, since I don't follow these things as much. So if my if I have plebeian observations, they'll be new to me, but they might have been said a lot of times before. But my first impression is, as we're walking into this, Dean is talking about how nervous he is, and we've seen this teased before. So I think, you know, this, I think I was skeptical going into the family situation, how bad this would be, just because it feels like one of these things that could be like, okay, this is produced to get us to feel like this is going to be a bigger deal than it is.
Right.
But we're watching this sort of date before the family thing, where they're on ATVs, they're in the countryside around Aspen in Colorado, and we're sort of seeing, like, we get the sense Dean, he's this startup recruiter, so, and I get the sense, like, between not getting along with his family and kind of having moved on, he hasn't been here since he
doesn't want to be here.
He doesn't know this area. He says he likes the wide open air, but this is not like his natural environment. It's like, correct, this is as like foreign to him as it might be to Rachel.
Well, not only does he have bad memories of it, of growing up here, but the high desert is pretty dull in a lot of parts. I mean, it's you know, gray. It's them. This is not. They're between seasons. You know, it's just not a very pretty time to be there.
Yeah.
And so it's like, just from the get go, he's at a disadvantage, because, like, how do you make this seem interesting?
Cause right.
It's not. You're right. It's not his hometown to him. He's completely detached himself from it, and for good reason. Well, I do want to point out that they were riding around on these ATVs. She had her helmet on.
Yeah.
I'm the Bachelor's insurance company, I'm sure, required that. But she had it put on in a way that some people do, like, where it's, like, way far back on her head, because she thinks she doesn't, you know, she wants to keep her head. But, like, if she actually fell off, the helmet would do nothing to stop her from, you know, cracking her skull.
Yeah.
Because of the way she's wearing.
It just helps cover, as you said, the who's ever ass it needs to cover, that she did have a helmet on.
Right. Yeah, we got sexual assault at, you know, Bachelor in Paradise, and we have, you know, helmet insurances in, you know, Colorado on ATVs. I mean, that's the only cool thing he can think to do. It's like, well, what the fuck am I going to do with her? Like, let's ride around on the ATVs. Like, whoop-de-doo.
Well, I'm not sure. I don't know if you know about Aspen or the surrounding area. I know that there are some very wealthy ski towns in Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
The sense I get of where Dean grows up and what we see of the house later, this feels like a very depressed, at least part of, I'm not sure if it is.
It's a farm. It's a farm, right? And,
okay.
And but we don't, I guess this is the dad's land, and he lives in some meth house lab looking place, like,
because they don't have this furniture, and as you said,
yeah,
he sort of
small little paper mache house.
He sort of writes off these things. You get the sense in this sort of shrouded in this pseudo spiritual like stuff. But you, the feeling overwhelmingly, something you had said earlier is like, I don't completely buy that he buys this, and it feels like there are sadder, darker reasons to why this place like looks the way it does.
Well, farms are typically, I mean, it's hard to lose money being a farmer because the government subsidizes things. And so typically farms look very nice and are well kept, and the houses are nice. And at least that's been my experience. But this farm is kind of the opposite. I get the sense that maybe, like, the dad and the wife back, but, like, he said he made a lot of money back in the day. So maybe they've paid off the farm. They haven't like leased it to any, usually, like, you would lease the land to a farm to other people so that they could farm it, but I get the sense that they've just sort of let it go.
Yeah.
And they got a couple horses milling around, and then they just got this little fucking dumpy meth addict paper mache house that they live in.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, maybe he's burned through all of his money, but it doesn't seem like they have money anymore. I don't know. That just seems weird to me. Like, what happened to the life insurance of the mom? I mean.
Right.
But, you know, maybe she had cancer. Maybe they had to spend it all on that. I don't know. We don't know.
Yeah.
So they walk up to this crappy piece of shit house, and he's like, literally, I do not want to do this.
Right.
Like, this is going to be awful. And she's like, oh no, this is going to be great. And, you know, I'm so proud of you. And this is like a really evil side of her, because, like, she knows this is not going to go well. And she's like, she could easily be like, you know what, let's not do this. Let's just go in and say hi and leave. But she's like, she wants to see the fireworks just as much as the producers do.
Yeah. Yeah. And, he's nervous, and he does seem legitimately nervous, because he's like, really does not want to go. When we enter, the family is sitting on the floor. They seem ready. You know, there's already a camera or something in there, because we're ready to capture the moment when they come inside. And we've got the father, a few siblings. The father has since remarried, and his wife is also there. And and then
his wife, who's the second greatest woman that's ever lived.
It's great. It's the person you are potentially going to die with, saying, right, you know, you're the second greatest person.
Yeah. Well, okay, here I'm gonna pinch my nose and try to do this right.
Oh, it's so great to see you all. You know, I'm gonna play the gong for you, because I practice play the gong is just so spiritual. It's gonna pull all the negative energy out of the room. And I've been practicing. I've got some gong sheet music. So everyone lay down. And I know this is the first time all you kids have, like, spent any time together in the last 10 years, because I've completely shattered this family. But the gong will bring us back together.
And this was a Bachelor Masters exclusive interview with Dean's father.
You know, I'm going to hit it hard, and then I'm going to hit it lightly. And I'm going to pretend that, you know, this actually does anything, because, you know, having never actually been around any Hindus or been to India, I this is all from YouTube videos, and I think the gong is, you know, I just watched the video last night, and this is something I really want to show off on television.
I mean, I will say, his father does seem like a broken man, doesn't he? It just seems like someone who, I don't know if he'll ever get it together in his life, but because, well, he would have to decide. But he does seem like he checked out a while ago, and he's sort of deluded, doesn't he?
Well, let's back up just a second. I mean, I'm totally cool with somebody changing, you know, redirecting their life. I think that's awesome, and I think more people would be happier if they decided they didn't like what they were doing and money wasn't important and decided to join Sheikh or the Hindu religion, or, you know, whatever. I don't know if a lot of Hindus would call it a religion, some might, but this is fine. Like, totally get it. That's cool. But he instantly comes across as a fraud because of the way, the distance he has with his own kids who are sitting around him. It's like if you truly were trying to become connected with yourself, you know, like Hindus, you look inward, you try to, you know, you try to work on yourself in order to become a better person, that would spill out, and you would immediately try to establish new connections with your kids, which is not what he does. He just comes across as a pompous, self-centered asshole,
yeah,
which goes against everything that the sheiks are about. And, like, I got so frustrated, because I know a lot of sheiks, and I've been to India, and I really have a lot of respect for that group of people, and just to see him wearing the turban, which itself represents a whole bunch, it just was so frustrating.
Right. Yeah, and it just seems like there's something, like, this man was damaged, whether it was because of the death of his wife or if before. It seems like he's had a past, as we alluded to, he alludes to, where he says, like, the only thing he was good at was making money. And it just seems like he was grasping between all of these things to make some meaning for himself and his life, but maybe he didn't quite connect with it in the way he had thought, but he needed to stick with it. And it almost seems like it's doing the opposite of what he says he wants it to do, which is connect him with people. And it's like a defense mechanism, it seems like. And we see this
some mental illness. All religions get exploited. You know, they all
totally.
Like
that's
Christians
what, yeah.
have their wackos, and you know, everyone
does. The sheik nature. Yeah, I want to make clear the fact that he's decided to become a sheik is not in and of itself the thing that makes me think that he's a broken person. That just it could be a lot of different superficial manifestations. But it seems like the way he uses it, the dynamic of the family, the way he deals with these things, he just does not seem like he seems like someone who's hurting quite a bit and just isn't dealing with it very well.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And to his credit, Dean's not going to back down.
I agree.
He knows this is that self-reflexive I'm on TV. Dean plays this perfectly. He knows exactly how to corner him and show him for real who he really is in front of camera. And this is his payback. And I whatever. You can take sides. You can feel bad for one or the other. But if Dean went all in on it and he did it. He executed it perfectly.
Yeah, he's sort of I found in this episode he's dealing with some really hard things that if cameras weren't there would be really hard, but I think it's heightened because cameras are there. But he does this thing where he does kind of confront the issue very directly, but never really loses his cool. Like he never gets into this thing where, you know, it's not the typical reality scene where suddenly he's screaming and swearing.
Right.
He's like very calm, and that there, yeah. There was something kind of moving about these as like.
Well, that's
scenes.
The way you get under people's skin is to stay calm when they get more and more frustrated. So he knew what he was doing. Now, I did have some sympathy for the dad as this went on.
Well,
it came out that the dad paid for his whole college,
mm-hmm.
which in it of itself is an act of parenthood.
Yeah.
So it's not like the dad was all bad.
Yeah, as he says, he was financially very present. Because I think
Dean's like, oh, well, yeah, you did provide for me financially, but.
Dean, yeah, he asks those very pointed kind of like rhetorical questions where he's like, do you think you were present as a father? And that's one of the defenses I think the dad says, like, well, I was financially there for you. But, you know, like, no, I wish I were more present in other ways. And he sort of criticizes Dean for being stuck in the past, essentially.
Which you know, the dad's saying all the wrong things, so he's not helping himself. But at the same time, Dean has sort of youngest child syndrome where he's like not seeing the forest for the trees on some things, which is like the dad was in pain too when the mom died and the whole family was in pain.
Right.
It's like it's not all about you, Dean.
Definitely.
Yes, you were 15 and that's like the most vulnerable age you can be in and it sucks, but you know.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of shitty things that happen to fucking 15-year-olds and
yeah, absolutely.
It's like he paid for your college and now you live in Venice. So it's like it's I think Dean maybe he never got therapy, maybe he needs therapy, but I think there's some things that could be worked out so he could realize that, you know, it wasn't maybe quite as bad as Dean has made it out to be, because some of that gets a little bit exposed in Dean's narrative here, which is it wasn't quite as bad as we're led to believe.
Well, yeah, I also agree. Yeah, I think that, you know, I'm sure it's hard to see, especially, I don't know if his father was really a completely different person before this, or if it is really like he's the same person who's just using some of these things as props, more or less, you know, in like not in a very deep way. But in any case, you know, I think like Dean does seem to have some attachment to the past in a way that, you know, it would be better for all involved. It's like you don't have to like or support your dad doing these things, but he doesn't seem to take into account that like people need to choose whatever their path is, even if you disagree, like you find it repellent or something. It's sort of like your dad is not going to bend to your will. And to your point, you're right. He did support Dean in kind of getting him started. And he's like, got to go and find his own thing now, you know?
Well, for better or for worse, it is rewarding to see a fake sham of a sheik get cracked and lose it. I mean, I love going to the airport and watching people lose it. That's why I watch The Bachelor, is because it's a pressure cooker. You put people in these tight spaces and you watch them crack. And that's what, I mean, I'm sure that's why other people watch it. I love it. I mean, I get, that's just my hidden vice passion, is watching people lose it in these tight situations. The dad cracks and he loses it. And it's so freaking fun to watch, because he's saying the wrong things, and he tries to make up for it by, like, going back to his chicness. He's like, oh, well, I really want to, you know, make peace in the world.
Well, what he's saying right now, he says itself. Is, whatever you, in my teaching, that's what he says, in my You're teaching, right. Whatever you think of the other is what you think of yourself. So when Dean is sort of accusing him of these things, he's trying to, like, say, like, that you're projecting all this stuff.
Let me go back to the playbook, and it's like, I got, you know, he just doesn't know what to say, and he's
but
just pulling
he
out,
does,
like, the...
I mean, I know, again, we've sort of thoroughly decided that, you know, like, he's not, whether he's misunderstanding these teachings or purposefully using, like, I don't know if it's, I can't say for sure if it's, like, an evil, like, manipulation, or if he's just deluded. I could see either, honestly. It's like, I don't know this man well enough to know if he realizes that he's so inconsistent, but he does switch back and forth where, when it's convenient for him, he says, well, let's not talk about, like, no, he falls back on the teachings, but then, like, here, he starts yelling swear word, and now
it's
he says, like, my
you.
Good blessings, and walks away. It's like, he's of so two completely different minds that he switches on and off, and there's something wild.
Well, I kind of, like, wondered if he started drinking after, like, 20 years, like, because he starts holding a plastic cup, and then he, like, throws it out into the bushes. I kind of wonder if that's, like, whiskey or something. He's, like,
and he
spits off the wagon. Oh, God. And then, meanwhile, Rachel is out, like, hanging out in a fire pit, like... What's she doing? Like,
well,
what is
this is all.
She must be hearing the whole thing, because the house is made of paper mache. But, like, then he goes out and, like,
there's nowhere to vacate. There's no place for privacy here. So I also wonder when Dean's, like, in the house on his own. I'm like, that is, the house is one room. But she approaches the father and says, "May I talk to you?" And he says, "If you must." And this is where he sort of has the he's like. Going to talk, but he says that he's done. This is like the normal conversation where the contestant will, or the bachelorette will talk about, like, do you approve of me asking for your son, or, you know, getting married to your son, kind of thing. And he just, I don't know if he's unfamiliar with the show. This feels like the most raw, like, genuine thing, like someone who is not prompted by producers about what to do. There is something, I mean, just when you see anyone, whether they deserve it or not, like, just being completely broken down, I do find there's something kind of sad about that.
Oh, of course.
But that's also part of why it's compelling to me. It's not even in, like, a, I'm getting off on his kind of suffering, but there is a, I do, you know, there's something, he's going through some stuff there, and you get to see it on camera, and he just walks away.
Well, the good news is nobody in his circle of friends, I'm sure, watches the show. So it's not like he's going to get any blowback.
No, I think
someday we'll forget all about this. But, like, when you're in the moment, you do really feel, like, really sad, because it's like this guy is getting, you know, getting beaten up on national television. But
yeah, I'm pretty
everyone
sure
gets
that
everyone who's on television gets beaten up.
Exactly. That's what I think. He's so far out of the loop that he probably didn't realize what this was going to be. But it's also, I agree, why I think he'll have some of the least consequences, because I don't think he cares what anyone tweets about him or says about, you know, I don't think he's checking any of that. So.
Do you think they get union? Is it like union location fees? Is he getting paid because this is a, like, location?
That's a good question. I don't know how people who appear on the show, if they get paid like a guest actor in a scripted show would. I wonder if he gets, like, royalties from being on the show.
Right.
I have no idea.
Well, you know, I think there's probably set prices for, like, when they set up somewhere, like, just. Because they set up cameras and lights, like, there must be a fee that goes to the place that they're shooting at.
I'd be surprised if there were. It seems illegal if there weren't. So
I mean, if they give them, like, $5,000, that could go a long way to, like, refurbishing the pillows.
Yeah.
And now he's doing, like, this creeper shit.
Well, that was. I was wondering if this seems like a directed shot, because I don't know if someone. Maybe not. If the cameras are there all the time and he's kind of there wondering when they're going to leave, you might wander up right. and kind of look like that. But they make it look like he's peeking in on, like, Rachel and Dean, which obviously right. I don't think he's coming up and peeking in on Rachel and Dean. He's probably looking at right. the crew of, whatever, 10 or 15 people, whoever's in his right. house, you know.
Well, and so anyway, we're on the sorry, I didn't mean to dismiss you. Like anyway, but just to move it along a little bit, to kind of sink us to what's happening. They're laying on the floor on the pillows that have never been washed, and this is where I really wish Eric would win, because of all four, Eric really seems like the most mature. Because the mature thing, what I would imagine a mature man would do, is you just sort of get up, dust yourself off and go on to the next thing, which is like, okay, that was a really shitty experience. We'll address it, but now's not the time. You know, let's go for a walk or do something else. But they lay there super awkwardly, and he kind of shifts, like, he's like a octopus that, like, is changing colors. He, like, shifts through, like, multiple emotions within the course of, like, 15 seconds. He's like, I love you. I'm mad. You know, what's your favorite color? Like, it's like he just, like, cycles. It's like a dog. You know when, like, a dog sees a treat and it goes through all of its, you know, it rolls over and it twirls around and it sits and it barks. It goes through every trick it knows.
Yeah.
All at once. That's kind of what he does. He just sort of, like, doesn't know what to do. And that really shows his immaturity, because it's like that's not what you do. It's like, now is not the time to, like, go into the bachelor, I love you, I'm vulnerable crap, which is what he does.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's a safe default, but yeah, I don't know if it shows. You know, he's young. He's immature, as you say.
Well, he gets cut. We all know he's going to get cut. And here we are. We're at the Rose ceremony. So have they all flown back to L.A.? Is that
it looked like, I believe we just saw a establishing shot of downtown. So I think we're back in L.A. Yeah, and Chris Harrison's finally back after he's been kind of scarce recently. You've noted
this.
Yeah,
well, he didn't make the trip to Geneva. One of our more popular tweets was pointing out that Chris Harrison did not show up on the last episode, and he barely made it on that. Maybe they're phasing him out. Maybe they realize he doesn't need to be there all the time, but he really has no role. And it's very strange. This really stood out to me, where he seems very tired, doesn't really know what to say. Like, because maybe he realizes, like, this is getting real. Like, this is more real than it usually is.
Yeah.
And he actually has to, like give her advice.
I know.
Like, he seems really, like, concerned. And, like, maybe not necessarily concerned for Rachel, but concerned that, like, he doesn't know what to say. Like, because he is the host of the show, and he needs to think on the fly, and, like, he hasn't done this in a while, so it's like, what does he do? What does he say?
Yeah, he is very quiet. Mostly, I'm watching him right now giving an expression with his eyes. Like, he does a big thing with his eyebrows, but he doesn't say anything.
Well, this is the point where we start to wrap up. I mean, we all know what happens, and I don't recall the previews for the next episode where we go to, we don't even go to her hometown. We don't go to Dallas. We go to somewhere in, I want to say Italy, and that's where they've flown her family to.
Oh, really? And I was wondering, because they do have shots of her father who has been absent.
Well, it's what we assume is his father, right? He seems kind of shorter. Oh,
that's a good point. Yeah, it could. I thought it was like a paternal figure, but yeah, maybe. Yeah.
But we're talking about the same guy. He's kind of shorter and a little pudgy. And he looks like he's wearing like a purple polo shirt or something.
Yeah, I believe so.
That was the only thing that stood out as being interesting in the previews for next episode.
Do they usually have a rose ceremony at this point too? I was surprised that they don't just, she didn't just say, okay, Dean,
you're cut.
Sorry. Like, I can't remember if JoJo did this or not, but I thought for her, she might've just grabbed the person who's cut and said, hey, can I talk with you outside? I thought it was a little, that was something that also added a bit to the cruelty of the way Dean's cut is. They still, even though it's only four people, three people getting roses, built up the suspense, and then, you know, it's also...
Well, I think more and more over the years, the rose ceremony has become less important and rigid. I mean, I think Chris, the Iowa farmer who recently killed the other farmer and got away with it, he was actually really into the rose ceremonies and like would kind of, that's the opposite of what I was actually going to say, which is he was really into like cutting somebody when it was apparent they needed to be cut. He would pull them aside and say, "You're cut."
Yeah.
And so he wasn't really into the rose ceremony. But back in the day, you know, like the show was very like the rose ceremony is what the show is about, and this is how it gets done. But they've really that's kind of gone to the side.
Yeah, I've noticed even in the short time I've been watching this season, the episodes are structured around rose ceremonies a lot less. Like they'll come
at
the middle of the episode, at the beginning of the episode. They're not always like episode end with rose ceremony. So it is a different dynamic.
But I think the reason that we are having one is because they all needed to come back to LA anyway.
Yeah.
Because like they're all in these different places, so you got to do something. But like, I don't think the hometowns are typically like the 2-on-1 dates where they like leave the person. Like, she was not going to leave Dean on the ranch in Colorado. Like, while she flies away in a helicopter. I just don't think there's precedent for that.
Oh, no.
So they're all going to go back to Topanga or wherever the hell the house is, and they're going
to... They get to dress up one more time. They look nice. Even, you know, if you're the one getting cut, Dean, you get to appear on camera, something for your reel if you decide to send your reel out to everyone afterwards.
Is this where she's wearing that, like, greenish eyeshadow?
Yeah,
that...
the eyeshadow. Now, again, I have no don't understand sense that whatsoever, so I don't understand lots of things, but that really jumped out to me. And especially, you know, with TV, like, you're able to see things so clearly on TV that it's like it really jumps out.
Well, she already has these huge fake eyelashes. She doesn't need to, like, do this huge, elaborate eye makeup. She could have just done a very simple thing. And if she wants to match her dress, which I think is what she was trying to do, that's cool, but it's like, egad, like, you look like a circus clown. Sorry, Rachel, but it's true.
You know, she's a natural beauty, so that was something that also, I think in general, she's, as are a lot of the gentlemen on the show, they can just kind of dress down and look good. You know, they've got, like, naturally kind of, like, nice bodies and stuff, so...
Sure.
In general, I'm kind of a less is more person. But again, I realize how little I know on all these things. So if someone came to the defense and explained why it was great, I would say, yep, okay, I can kind of see that. But it's a bold choice. I can say it's a bold choice.
Well, we recorded this Saturday. Today's Saturday. And the show is going to air on Monday. So it's quick turnaround. We hope people will listen in the short time we have until our next podcast, hopefully on Tuesday night when we are supposed to record, but things keep popping up in our lives that get in the way. It's like that movie Final Destination. It's like things keep getting in the way. Let's see if we can record Tuesday night, in which case we'll be back with you on Bachelor Masters. Chris, it's always great conversing on these terribly important issues of our time with you.
Same here, Craig. I love doing it.
So hit us up on Twitter at Bachelor Masters, and we will be meeting, hopefully, Rachel's judge father for the first time in Bachelor history. This will be great. I cannot wait. It'll be a tremendous moment, I'm sure, for us and everyone in Bachelor Nation.
Yes.
So to the sororities down the street, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Bye.